McLean. Dick Coach's Corner.
You're listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plymer.
For someone to explain.
Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
All right, welcome to episode number 50 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plymer, and this episode will be the first of a series on coaches involved in the new Major League Rugby competition starting up in the US for 2018. Joining me today is Curry Hitchborn, who is no stranger to the podcast. Curry was guest number 10 on the Rugby Coaches Corner and is the first to rejoin the show. He's recently announced as the new Director of Rugby Development at the Seattle Seawolves, and it's great to be chatting with him again. So welcome, Curry.
Hey, thanks, Andy. I'm pretty funny that I'm actually coming back around. If you look at how far you and I've come from our glory days of Canada U17 to podcasts. What an amazing world we live in, Andy. I'm pumped to be here. Looking forward to getting this on the roll.
Yeah, no, I'm stoked too. It's like, you know, I often think back to that time where you, me, and Dan Meikle were coaching together with the U17s, yeah. And that was just like, it's one of the highlights of my coaching time so far. And the fact that this is the 50th episode, I'm just stoked to be doing it with a good mate like you, and stoked to have you on.
Cheers. And I'm working tirelessly to find a way to get the band back together. I don't know how we do it, but we'll find a way.
It's got to happen, man. Cool. All right. So, what's a bit of a general description of your role? Oh, firstly, can we start? What's a seawolf?
So you said depends on which part of mythology you're going to want to look into. It's got a lot of resonance with the First Nations people all up and down the coast, as well as your early Mariners talk as well. It could be anything from, I believe it's a sea lion at this stage. There is a group of sea wolves that actually live in the Great Bear Rainforest in BC as well, which are a group of wolves that have lived up and down the coast for quite some time, foraging, things like that. So I think it's the perfect blend of Cascadia. You've got the ocean and the mountains right there, and it's a good, strong name. And it's in a city that is, you know, if you look at the colors that they've got as well, and, you know, the current usage of names and things like that, it speaks really well to the city and their sport culture also.
Yeah, a bit of mongrel in there as well.
For sure, absolutely, man. You're not up there on that rugby field, you're not up there to make friends.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. Awesome. So what's a bit of a description with your new role with the Seattle Seawolves?
So my job with the Seattle Seawolves is I would be the Director of Rugby Development. And in speaking with the CEO, one of the CEOs and one of the co-owners of the team, Adrian Balfour, when the conversations we'd had moving up to this point of me being hired, and the conversations that my business partners at Northrend I'd had, and how we want to work with this franchise, with this group of people in this new league. We figured that it's not really the best way forward to stick with your traditional rugby terms, be it like a director of rugby, or anything like that. What we're looking at is we're looking at this North American model in terms of maybe looking at a new identity. And one thing that we all agree upon is that it's not enough to just have a professional team, any more than it's not enough to just have a professional or a provincial team or a national team. You have to have things built in behind that. So looking to complement both the PSOs, and that's anybody from, that's coast to coast here in Canada, and an NSO looking to work with them. You want to create a complementary series of, programming and things like that would work well with the overall vision, not only of your national sport organizations, your provincial sport organizations, but from a community level as well. I'm very, 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 very clear on my thoughts that I don't want to have that much delineation between Canada and USA in terms of this professional league, because I think that if North America is going to survive, as the game continues to grow, then we need to start looking at expanding competitions. We need to start looking at housing more athletes and giving more identity to more athletes. And that's where I roll in. So my job is identifying athletes, speaking with club coaches in the United States as well as Canada, trying to speak with various members of USA Rugby, Rugby Canada, the BCRU, and some other provincial sporting organizations as well, just to get their beat on athletes. Also, again, we want to be working with, not against people. So, you know, that's a lot of, you know, a lot of people have put a lot of time and resources into these athletes to get to this stage, and you want to honor that. I do a lot of rugby, everywhere from kindergarten to senior level players and everything in between. And one of the things that I'm very, very keen on is that engagement piece. When, you know, speaking with Adrian and a lot of the other members, it became readily evident that this was a great fit for me. I've dedicated my life to rugby for many different reasons, and I've been very, very, very lucky to be working with some very, very excellent people, and have worked with some excellent people over the years. And now it's just bringing all those connections in together and making sure that it works for everybody involved.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you raised about recognizing where the athletes have come from. I think often at the top end of the food chain, a lot of the credit gets missed in terms of, you know, what was the high school that this kid went to, and who was their club coach, and who was the person who first got them interested in rugby. And I think, you know, hats off to those people, and often that gets missed, right?
Well, yeah, it does. And I think, you know, why I quite like my, why I'm thoroughly enjoying my new role, you know, and extremely lucky to be in the position that I'm in right now, is that I'm not just the guy who's working for the Seattle Seawolves franchise in the MLR. I still volunteer coach at my high school. I'm coming into my 12th year of the high school I graduated from. And if it weren't for, you know, guys like Jeremy Sable, my first ever rugby coach, or Richard Weiss, one of my first ever rugby coaches, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. And like, I've no shame admitting that I was just a god awful rugby player, but those guys saw something in it, you know, and a lot of coaches along the way saw that, you know, something that I would be good at. And they took the time to develop me, not necessarily, certainly tried as a player, but you know, you can lead a horse to water. And, after injuries and, you know, my career completely cut short, quite hard on my body, it seemed like a natural transition for me. And, you know, the biggest part for me has always been engagement. Like, I like people. I really, really like people, and I really like the game of rugby in particular because it's so imperfect. You know, no one's ever going to get it 100% correct. And I think that's not a problem. I think that's a really excellent, excellent value point. You know, it's something to look forward to every single day. I'm never going to be the best at my job, no matter what it is. And rugby, it's never been more clear than that.
Yeah, I think that's a cool perspective. And I was just listening to a pod today with David Vessels talking about that exact thing, that, you know, coaching is the perfect job for that, because every year you kind of reflect back and there's a few cringeworthy moments where you kind of wish you could have that time again. And then, you know, next year there's probably going to be a few different ones, but from, you know, different angle. And yeah, I think you're spot on there.
I've been lucky to encounter a lot of success as a coach, a program head for various organizations. And, you know, I think it's more quantity, not quality. I just happen to do so much of it that I'm bound to encounter some success somewhere, because I don't always get it right at all on field. I know exactly what you mean. But having said that, you know, it's the same way we treat our players, where, you know, if you're mindful and you have, you know, that level of self-actualization, then you know when you're getting it right and you know when you're getting it wrong. And as you grow in any role, you know, be it a player, be it a top level manager, be it a coach, be it a athletic therapist, be it anybody, being cognizant of those mistakes is important. But more so, I find it's most important to be in an arena of conflict where those mistakes are encouraged. I know we all talk about a lot of those things. We all talk about culture and, you know, the making of mistakes. But every time I've seen a coach turn around and say, "No, I'm totally okay with mistakes," they're the first ones to bench a guy after he makes a mistake in game. You know, and it's easy to say. It's even tougher to lead. It's even tougher to live that life. And, you know, I just think that with this MLR opportunity, we're able to take all of those mistake positive environments. We're able to take all of the athletes that have learned from their mistakes, and it not only just engage them, but engage the people that support them. And the people that support them are anywhere from their families to their previous coaches. You know, it could be that high school teacher that always believed in somebody coming out and finally watching. So as it takes more shape and as it continues to grow, you know, there's going to be a lot of mistakes. And as you make those mistakes, you're just going to have to assess it, not just be accountable for it, but own those mistakes and carry yourself on through it. That's what excites me the most about this.
It is an exciting follow-up to pro rugby, which only lasted a year. What's going to be different about MLR? How's the structure different? And, you know, what how many teams are involved for those who haven't really got an idea on what the setup is just right now?
So right now we're looking at 8 teams. Next year there's going to be some considerable growth based on, you know, the talks going around the league. I think it's an unfair, remove the passive language from that. It's an unfair comparison. Pro the league set up by Doug Schoeninger was an absolute necessity. You know, they didn't pull it off in their delivery, and that's a shame. You know, because it was a brand new, exciting opportunity. But what it did is it highlighted a lot of areas I think that as a rugby community, everybody in North America needs to be aware of. And I think that, you know, the work that they did in early on, the work they put in to bring this sport in particular to North America was something that no one had done before then. And it's really easy, to cast aspersions. I wasn't a part of that. I don't know the people that ran that league from anybody else. But what I do recognize was the immediate value on that. Mm. And to be able to make a comparison to what's currently going on with the MLR to pro rugby, I think just further substantiates the need for professional rugby in this country. I mean, we've now got our own system in which we can look back and say, hey, that could have been improved upon. So let's improve upon it, going back down to that mistake positive piece I was speaking about. Mm. How this league differentiates from pro, and I don't really understand the pro setup or what exactly that looked like. I've got a very loose idea, but none of it concrete enough to merit an opinion. The way the MLR is set up is it's a very, very, very investor-friendly league, and it looks after the players first, and that's why I was very keen on it. You have to have certain benchmarks hit before you can put a team in. There all sorts of metrics accounted for. And it's a really, really interesting concept in the sense that it's like pay to play. You've got to show that you are financially stable if you want to put a team out. And if you're not, no one's gonna carry you along. And I think that's what's really great about that. It's a very excellent approach to a sport that, while isn't new in this country at all, is in this country, Canada, in this country, USA. It is a new system. It's a new system with an older product. And you know, if we look at the success of, say, MLS, for example, you've got a typically European sport that's come to North America and has quite a large fan base. And you'll hear people say, people from other soccer-dominant countries, oh, well, it's not good soccer, and it's, you know, forgive me for calling it soccer to those people. you'll get people that'll go, well, it's not very good soccer, but you know what? They're still at the games, or they're still watching it on TV, or, you know, it's another sporting event. And I see no reason why rugby can't do the same. It is in certain areas, but I think if we're going to really make the most of rugby in this new platform with MLR, then what we're going to do is we're really, really, really going to have to work hard at making it not only entertaining, but maybe keeping more structure in place than previous organizations didn't. If you follow my line of thinking there.
Yeah, for sure. Going back to your role as Director of Rugby of Development, what do you think is important for coaches to remember when they're taking on a developmental role in terms of like the actual nuts and bolts of what a session should look like and the engagement with the athletes and those kind of things?
Well, that's a huge question. I mean, there's so many variables we've got to take into place. One, what are the resources of the team you're coaching? Mm-hmm. What are the resources of the community that you're coaching? What does your actual physical plant look like? What is the experience level of the athletes? What is the engagement level of rugby inside that community? What does all of that look like moving forward? And I think that the most important thing I could say to anybody in my experience, you know, and I did the math on it, and I do about 340 days of rugby every year, and I've done so for about the past, I would say, close to 8 years now at this stage. And you know, crossing so many different rugby platforms, the best advice I could ever give would be is any point's a starting point. I don't subscribe to the belief that we need to be modeling our rugby sessions following the same methodology as rugby-rich countries. I think that with the amount of cross-sport pollination in both Canada and North America, that people that elect to become rugby coaches are sitting on some really rich territory. And that is through sport comparison. I spend a lot of time explaining to flankers and centers what the role of an outside linebacker or middle linebacker is in American style football, like NFL or CFL, while at the same time talking about, you know, the various rules on a hockey rink and how that relates to rugby players or even basketball for that matter. There's a lot of excellent crossover from a lot of sports that the athletes we get grew up playing.
Yeah.
And instead of trying to force that square peg into a round hole, I think that as coaches, if you're going to start out a developmental anything, is find out what sports the athletes are playing, update your own knowledge, and then create some compatibility there. It's a lot easier to explain to somebody throwing a rugby ball, you know, like on a line-out throw. You can throw a football, you can throw a line-out ball. It's going to go where your hand releases it. You want to minimize your movements. You know, you want to keep your elbows tucked in tight, and really reduce those areas of margin as an example. So going back to that development piece, I mean, any point's a starting point. I remember showing up my first ever coaching gig. I showed up one day. There was my old high school coach was actually on the field. I just put my head up and said, "Hey, I'd like to coach." And he's like, "Great, get after it." And that was 12 years ago.
Yeah, awesome.
Trial by fire. That works really well with me. I was just left alone and told to get on with
it.
Man, oh man, Andy, how many times did I screw that up?
Oh man, you don't ever want to. No one even want to talk about my first couple of years. I think every coach experiences.
We can.
Oh yeah, no, maybe on the 100th you can interview me.
Sweet, I'm going to take you up on that offer. So, I mean, like, you know, Andy, back to that developmental piece. It is, there's so much that you have to take into account, and that's again why I think the MLR is so exciting. Is that, you know, if everybody does their job and everybody is just their best, that's all you can ever ask of anybody, is just do their best.
Yeah.
Then I think what we'll start to see, and this is, you know, waiting a really long time to say this, but we're going to start seeing North America develop its own rugby identity. I'm not saying it doesn't have it already, but I'm talking in terms of style of play and the way we engage those around us and the support we get. And, you know, it really starts with that developmental piece. And then it's coaching 101, right? It's relevant. Now we got to make it a staple. So hopefully as MLR becomes more of a staple, we'll see, you know, maybe some more guidelines come in or some more common language that's indicative to, you know, Canadian coaches and American coaches and American players and Canadian players. And that's, you know, it's probably a little bit idealistic, but rugby is such an easy game to play. It's super basic in its entirety. That's also why it's so easy to consistently screw up, right?
Well,
so when you develop it.
Yeah, go, sorry.
I was going to say, so that's why when you think about development and what you're starting, is always ask yourself that question. Well, yeah, any point's a starting point. What's your end goal? Like, what are you looking to do here? Are you looking to engage athletes? Are you looking to win your season? What's the quality of play? Like, how old are they? You know, so there's so many variables in there. That's what's always kept me coming back. And I know it keeps it, like, there's a lot of coaches out there, just like myself, just like Tony Healy, just like Phil Mack, which are the two head coaches for the Seattle Seawolves. There's so many guys out there just like us, just waiting to, you know, waiting to try new things, waiting to put themselves on the line for something they believe in. That I think this opportunity is exactly that. It's an amazing opportunity for development because it's really no different than anything else I've ever done. It's a brand new league with brand new athletes, and it's, you know, it's got an eye towards long-term development. Now, are we necessarily developing those players on the field? I would hope not. I would hope that by this stage in the game, they definitely know, you know, right from wrong, but also that comes back to understanding that mistakes are going to happen and learning as you go.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think out of that, the one that grabbed me, was, you know, modeling off other countries is not ideal for me. Having lived in North America for 10 years, I'm convinced that North American rugby athletes, especially male rugby athletes, it's a late developing rugby community. We're never going to compete with hockey. We're never going to compete with football. But we're going to get some players who come out of that system, and by their mid-20s, they're going to be really good rugby players. Whereas, you know, if you went to New Zealand, Australia, South Africa model, they're going to be kind of club guys by that age. And I think our development should be offset with that in mind.
Andy, here's how I think about it. You know, it would be like me, let's say I'm a high-level hockey coach in Canada from, you know, a really excellent area in Saskatchewan, and I've got all the best players coming through, and I put more, my programs put more people in the NHL than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And then I'm picking that model up, and I'm taking it with me, and I'm going to the farthest reaches of New Zealand. And I'm going to tell all those young kids in New Zealand that they're going to play hockey just like we did in Saskatchewan. What do you think is going to happen? And they're going to go, okay, I guess. And that's what we get over here. You know, like I'll be honest with you, I'm completely fed up with it. There's value in everything. Sometimes you just have to look really hard. But where things start to lose their value for me, in particular in rugby, is when I get told that the way things are done over here from domestic coaches or, quote, community coaches isn't the way forward. And I think that's a brutal condemnation. I don't think ever in this sport you should ever feel the need to come down on somebody because they're trying something new or they're putting themselves out there or they're creating a new model. I think it comes down to the implied ownership of rugby that some countries think they may have and some organizations think they do. And really, at the end of the day, nobody owns this sport except for the person on the field. And even then, they don't own the sport. They own their role in the sport. So why wouldn't we work our damnedest to make sure that they take pride in their ownership and they carry that with them, not only on the field, but, you know, in their home life, their social life, their professional life, their careers. There's so much value there that why would I be telling people to live their lives or play rugby on somebody else's terms when I'm trying to get the most out of them as human beings? To me, it's never matched up. It never will match up. And that's why I feel so strongly about these steps that, you know, a lot of people are taking in North America, because it's a step in a very, very, very honest, forthright direction. And there's, like I said, there's going to be a lot of mistakes, but at the very least, there'll be our mistakes, right? There'll be the mistakes that we made, not the mistakes we made delivering somebody else's programming. There's no ownership there. I wouldn't want to play for that system. I wouldn't want to play for that, you know, for that style of anything. Like it doesn't belong to me. And, you know, you're asking people to put their lives on hold to come out there and put their bodies on the line. And I think that if you're going to do that, then there needs to be a very clear and concise understanding as to what your ultimate goal is. And if your goal is there to play, to show that you can read a playbook and coach a certain system from a, you know, from a rugby specific country, then I think you're doing a whole disservice, not only to athletes, but to yourself as well. Everybody wants to be the author of their own story, you know, and in a world where, you know, we're constantly struggling to identify with things, what an easy way to find your own identity. It has nothing but upside for me.
Yeah, great. Awesome. No, I agree. And it's an exciting new addition to the rugby landscape in North America, without a doubt. Some of your roles outside of your new role with the Seawolves has been with North Star Rugby. What's North Star about, and can you let listeners know a little bit more?
Yeah, not a problem. A group of us created North Star Rugby some years back as a way to stem the flow of people essentially leaving rugby. We looked at it in some of the areas where we coach, and the numbers were just way down to the point where we started to see programs shrivel up and die. And there's so many different reasons for that. And, you know, you can't pin the blame on any one person or any one organization or any one aspect. But what you can do is you can look at it, the current processes in place, and go, well, maybe we can do things differently. So with North Star, a bunch of us just got together and said, you know what, let's try this out. So we started going to smaller towns in British Columbia, up and down the coast or the interior, coaching kids, like rolling into programs with connections we made and just rolling out, running a free session or running a couple free sessions, doing some clinics, doing some community outreach. Mm-hmm. And then as we got a little bit more progress, we started organizing some sevens tournaments at the Capilano Rugby Club here in North Vancouver, BC, quite a large youth event. And then 2 years ago, a year and a bit ago, we made a pitch to two school districts in North Vancouver to run a rugby academy, and they really liked it. And what my job now is in that role is, instead of PE, kids take my rugby class, and it's not gender specific, and it's not skill specific. Anybody can join. And instead of PE, what you do is you come to my rugby class, and that's it. You learn how to pass. You learn how to catch. You take ownership for being in a team, you know, outside of something that you normally would. It's not your high school. It's not your rugby club. It's inside schooling. And that's, you know, that's also something I'm quite passionate about because, you know, North Star's mandate is that it has to be the people first. Mm-hmm. So it makes my job really, really easy. And it relieves a lot of the stress on the surface of, you know, finding a hardline measure of success, you know, week in, week out. It's not like coaching a team where you judged, you know, by whatever game you just had or the quality of a session. Mm. It's more along the lines of where are we at for year two. So year one, I had a very small class, ran it as a pilot group. And then year two, we doubled our numbers. And year three, we're looking at maintaining even more growth and branching into other school districts here in this province. So that's what North Star was born of. It was not born to compete with anything. It was literally born to keep people engaged in this sport, help develop them, and help them reach their goals. And it's been outstanding. It's been a long going. It's not been easy, and it's probably going to get a lot harder before it gets to a point where it is as consistent as I would like it or my other partners would. But for the time being, it's constantly exciting. And again, I really love my job. I get to hang out with kids all day.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I think it's, you know, there's so many opportunities for those kind of projects in North America. There's people who should be playing rugby but don't really know it exists. And if you go knocking on a door or two, who knows what can come from it.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you bring that point up because, you know, I'm constantly looking for ways to not just engage, but to, you know, to educate people on rugby as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's not my job. My job isn't, I'm not walking around with a Rugby for Dummies book saying that this is what rugby is, but it is, you know, it's dispel some of those earlier myths that you may find. You know, it's rugby's in a tricky spot right now. Contact sports in general are, and you know, in my academy class, I don't do tackling. I won't do it. There's no need for it at this stage in their youth development. And, you know, so every hour that I could be spending on tackling, I spend on body positioning, pre-tackle, I spend on concussion education. I turn into why we tackle smart first and then hard second. You know, and those views are my own, and you know, I get a toy with it, but staying abreast of things and making sure that these young athletes have a position to play as they continue forward, be it touch, be it contact, be it sevens, be it rugby league, be it anything. That's a really exciting opportunity where I get to put those skills in their hands and, you know, and engage them and retain them across all those platforms. So that's what North Star is right now. We've got some other things in the works as well. Like I've mentioned to you, we're bringing a team to Vancouver in 2019 through North Star, an MLR
that's
team.
Yeah.
That's our stated purpose, and we're working towards that end as well while sharing some of the workload with the Seattle Seawolves program. You know, what professional rugby looks like in Vancouver remains to be seen. There's a lot of people that have a lot of different ideas, and I'm going to be really, really, really interested to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And like that's relatively new, that announcement. Is that correct?
No, I've been saying it since this announcement came out, since my announcement had come out.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that it's like I said, it's all so new and it's catching people by surprise, and you know what that looks like, and you know how to go about the proper funding model on that. Who are the investors you speak to? You know, it is super exciting, and that's something that we're working on. But the task at hand is the Seattle Seawolves franchise moving forward, maintaining. You know, not just maintaining the athletes we brought in, but attracting more athletes and more fans in, you know, in the state of Washington, up and down the Pacific Northwest as well. And that's, you know, like just, it's been so helpful in terms of planning for bringing a team to Vancouver. It's been very, very exciting to just see the strides that the Seattle Seawolves have made up to this point. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. So it's, you know, I'm very, very, very aware of, you know, all the neat opportunities facing a lot of people in rugby, myself in particular. So the ultimate goal is to just, you know, make sure you do right by everyone you set out to engage. You know, it's not enough for me. I couldn't just leave everything I've got going on up here in British Columbia and move down to Seattle. I, you know, they've got some excellent staff in there. They've engaged the Seattle Saracens. Their current head coach, Will Snape, will be the attack coach. There will be a good number of players from that organization that will be representing the Seattle Seawolves. You know, and good for them. They get to represent their home state, you know, their home club. So it's, you know, it's like that's the priority number one right here, is to make sure that this is as successful as it possibly can be.
Cool. We usually end the show with the same four questions, but you've already answered them. So I thought I'd change it up a bit. There's been some pretty awesome rugby being played over the last couple of months, internationally and professionally in various continents. From that, what are you, who have you liked watching, and who are some of the coaches you think have been, putting out a brand of rugby that's really, really exciting and engaging?
I think the most exciting rugby being played right now is that done by the University of British Columbia Thunderbirds. That's what I gave you last time.
And what else? What have you watched? Have you watched anything? This was terrible last time you answered this question, and it's shaping up that way again, I'm going to be honest.
Well, Andy, you know what? I just got to be honest with you. I'm a big fan of consistency. On the, you know what? Hey, look, on the international coaching scene, you know, being serious now, Rugby Canada has recently appointed Kingsley Jones as their new head coach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you know, Rugby Canada it's got a pretty heavy workload coming down its way right now, and having coached, you know, a large number of people that are involved with that program. People that are hoping to be a part of that program, I'm very, very interested in seeing what Mr. Jones brings to the table. Very, very interested. I've looked at the past records that he's held. I've looked at some of the, you know, the success of the teams when he was around, and you know, the ingredients are certainly there. And I would say that, you know, again, going back to my previous statement of, I believe that a North American approach to rugby is going to be the best approach for rugby in North America. I generally tend to keep my eyes on that. Recent appointment of Gary Gold in the USA is outstanding news.
That's
a huge, huge, huge step forward. And I think with Gary Gold coming in and Kingsley Jones coming in, we're going to see some new faces, which is always good. And I think that we're going to see some turnover as well, which may be needed. So I've been keeping my eyes pretty much locked on my phone, domestically speaking, Andy, for the last 3 months. That's just the best I got.
That's all good, man. Well, as with the first episode, I've really enjoyed this chat. It's great to catch up again, and look forward to, you know, I don't think we've seen each other since the last episode, so I need to get out your way, or you need to get out this way and talk rugby.
Andy, that's a standing invite, and that goes for anybody anywhere in the world. You want to pop on by, and you want to come in, run a session at UBC, or you want to come in and watch. Door is always open to anybody. Just shoot me an email, curryhitchborn@gmail.com. Let me know you want to come on down, and we'll put you right out there. You can watch, take in the strength conditioning, you know, put the guys through a drill, be around it. It literally, anything helps, because again, it's rugby's too big and too important for too many people to try and keep it in the hands of just a few people. So I stand by that anytime you want, Andy, and that goes for anybody anywhere. Hop on a plane, hop on a bus, hop on a bike, come on out and take it in.
Awesome. Love it, mate. Cheers.
All right, Andy. Take care. Thanks for the interview.
Okay. Welcome to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plimer, and this episode is the first of a series on coaches involved in the new Major League Rugby competition starting up in the US for 2018. Joining me now is Tony Healy. Tony is a former Canadian national player receiving 15 caps in the late 90s. Professionally, he played for Bordeaux, Bayonne, and Moseley RFC, to name a few. He was the BC Bears head coach in their undefeated 2017 CRC campaign, and has also had roles with Canada U20, James Bay, and Brentwood High School. He's going to be their head coach for the Seattle Seawolves in 2018, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show. So welcome, Tony.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, no worries, no worries. So pretty exciting times at the moment. What initially got you into coaching in the earlier days, and who were some of your main influences in that time?
When I, in 1996, I had an opportunity to go to France that I figured would be a year, and turned into pretty much 8 years in Europe. And then first year I was there, I was told that I would be coaching the cadet, which was like under 15, mm-hmm. like 15, U15 probably level. And then I was told again that I would be coaching, it was called the minime, I guess, is what they're called. And that'd be like under 8 at various times in the week. And it was unbeknownst to me. It was not anything I was expecting to do. And they just told me that I would do it and that it would be a good thing. And so sure enough, I went out and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it, especially the cadet, the older kids. I did okay with the 8-year-olds. at that time, I coached under 6 as well. So I had those ones. Those experiences as well, and I'm much better suited for kids who are a little bit further along. People who can do that and really instruct little kids like that, they've got something special. So then from there, when I was in Osh, I sort of made a conscious decision that I would like to be able to do something for the rest of my life that had something to do with sports. And the most logical way was to sort of try and pursue getting my coaching levels while I was in France. And while doing that, you have to go through basically a university-level course for a year, once a week, 3 hours a night on a Monday, and then go through all sorts of legislation and biomechanics and nutrition and physiology and a whole bunch of stuff. And then at the end, you have exams. And then from there, once you do that, then you can specialize in a sport.
Right. So it was a generalized approach first, and then they specialized in rugby after. Cool.
Exactly. And then while I was doing my second, when I was playing my second year in Bordeaux, is when I was able to do those, the rugby specific sort of things. And I was also playing with and around a guy by the name of Michel Maillet, who at the time was the national technical director, certainly the regional technical director, but I believe he was the national technical director for U17. He was an absolutely fantastic coach. Really, his level of pedagogy, I suppose, would be the best word to describe it, was very high. He made it fun. Guys understood, you know, it was always very calm and measured. It was an ambitious style of game. To me, it was sort of like the veil coming off of what we used to refer to as French flair, and learning how to play in the space and how to manipulate the space and how to create space, right, based on sort of running lines and people understanding other people's running lines and be able to adapt. I found it very inspiring, and I learned it was like a light went off, a eureka moment. And when that happened, I thought, you know what, this is so intuitive to me, and it reminds me of so many things that I did as a kid growing up. I played basketball, I played soccer, like kids play hockey and all the rest of it, right? So there's some commonalities and patterns within all of those games that I was all of a sudden able to see thanks to this guy. And I thought, wow, this is a really exciting style of game that would be easily, could be easily played over here. And I sort of vowed once I understood the, sort of to the depth that it just allowed me to see it, that and the simplicity behind it, that I wanted to come home and make a big change and change the way we play.
Yeah, I think that's great. Like, I growing up in Australia, Australian rugby tends to be very structured, very first phase orientated, especially in the backs. And you always kind of looked at French rugby as just almost chaos, and you didn't really appreciate it until, well, I personally didn't really appreciate it until I started coaching, and then, you know, got exposed to some guys like Francois Ratier and a few others, and just seeing what the methods were there in the ball carrier and the support lines, and the importance of the space around those too. I think there's a ton there that potentially other people have missed out before and could apply for sure.
Well, yeah, actually, Francois and I have known each other for a good number of years now, I suppose. When we got to know each other back when he was coaching the U17 boys. And quite honestly, it was like I found a kindred spirit with him, I speak, right? Like, we understood each other without having to explain sort of any of the sort of background to it, right? Kind of like when you go home, you don't have to tell background stories to lead up to what you want to say, right? So it was that easy with Francois. I had an enormous amount of respect for him, and I thought he did a fantastic job with the women.
Yeah, for sure.
Certainly, I qualify him as a first of all, a very good man, and secondly, you know, a very good coach.
Yeah, totally agree.
So then after, I guess after Michel Maillet, I'm a bit of a I used to joke and say I was a bit of a nerd about it, but I went after a whole bunch of books, right? French books on this specific sort of technique and tactic and technical and tactical side of things. And there was sort of a common route there was Pierre Villepreux, and who had been in Toulouse, and they always seemed to be playing a different style of game than everybody else in France when I was, they were at a different level. He and Jean-Claude Skrela took the French team to the World Cup final in 99.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but then from there, I would say that I sort of followed that and was able to play against Northampton one time and got to meet Wayne Smith.
Oh, great.
And learned after that that Wayne Smith had been greatly inspired and influenced by Pierre Villepreux. So it was the same sort of tact, same direction in any case, it seemed to me. And so I started studying up on Wayne Smith and what he does, so...
On, before we get on to the Seawolves, you had a great season with the BC Bears this year, winning the CRC for the first time since 2009. What were some of the ingredients you feel led to that success?
Quite honestly, I'd say it was the quality of the people straight across the board. You know, I know Phil and I, we both reached out to the clubs and we certainly reached out to the players. I went myself into dressing rooms and sort of challenged players to come out. I promised them that it would be something different, and it was very different. I think there are people who have similarities, but maybe my philosophy of play is a little bit different or what have you, right? But in any case, it's a bit of a different model, I suppose. But it's been something that I've worked at and sort of refined and done for 13 years, ever since I came back. Extremely successful with it. With the high school team, we were successful with it with the NA4 team. You know, and really it's mostly about a spirit. You were talking about, earlier you were talking about structured Australian rugby. I went to Australia for a season when I first started playing rugby at all. And I had the very good fortune of being at Randwick.
Right.
And at the time they had...
Bob Dwyer would have been in the mix.
No, Bob Dwyer was just...
Okay, yeah.
Maxwell and Eddie Jones was the second.
Right, yeah.
You know, sometimes you got to rub elbows with, like, the greatest players in the world at that time.
Yeah.
They were the defending World Cup champions at that time.
Yeah, unreal.
And I was way down the totem pole, but, you know, they had seven teams and pretty awesome. The first guy I met there would have been Michael Cheka.
I had him on the show too, and he would have, he was probably as intense then as he is now.
Actually, no, he was a really good guy.
Yeah, no doubt.
I met him on the very first practice, too. They told me to run down and go train with the sixth grade guys and the seventh grade guys. And I'm like, sure, no problem, whatever. And I went down to train with them. And then 10 minutes in, they said, no, go down with those guys. And I was absolutely gassed by the end of practice. I couldn't believe how good everybody was. I was just like, holy cow, that's crazy. And I'm walking back across the field with this guy who I never met. And I'm just like, man, what level is that? And he asked me why. And I said, because they told me I was playing with the sixth grade and seventh grade guys. And if that's sixth and seventh grade, I don't even want to know. And then it was Michael Cheka. And he said, no, man, it was all the guys had gone up to play for New South Wales. It was a bunch of the guys had moved up. So they had a space in their practice. And then away you go.
Yeah, great. That's awesome. All right. Well, you were recently announced as the head coach for the Seattle Seawolves. You know, I think there's a lot of excitement around MLR. What particularly excites you about this new role and the MLR in general?
Well, I suppose I'm a bit of a rebel, a little bit, you know. So I like the fact that it's sort of breaking with the status quo, that there are really talented, committed people who are rallying around a common vision. That's very inspiring. You know, a fantastic place to be up in the Pacific Northwest. I think we play absolutely sensational rugby up here. There's already a rich bed of talent to be able to help to develop and also to be able to field very competitive teams. I like the idea of taking the competition up another level. I know who some of the coaches are, in particular Alain Hiarde, who's in Austin. I had the great fortune of meeting him as a player when he was coaching Perpignan and was recruited by him actually to go to Béziers, but I went to a different team. And he's a reference, I think, across the world. His resume is pretty thick You know, he's had great success at very high levels of competition. So Austin has got themselves a very, very good coach. So for me, I would say that he would be the reference. Justin Fitzpatrick as well is a very good coach. And, you know, I don't know all of the names of the coaches, but I know what sort of commitment and vision these people have. So I know the people they have in place there will be extremely capable. So from a coaching standpoint, I think the challenge is enormous. It's also me a little bit putting my money where my mouth is. You know, I believe that this is really the way to go as far as a style of game. It's it's expensive. It's exciting. It brings out athletes. It's a you know, it's appealing for people to watch. You know, it's a, it markets the game well, I believe. And the players have a great time. I mean, it's just fun. You know, that's really sort of a central tenet as well, is that it has to be fun. I believe if you're having fun, then, you know, you're going to play better, be able to connect better with your friends. I mean, it's not to say that there's not going to be dark times and, you know, times to ask questions of yourselves, all of us. But at the same time, when it's all clicking together, it's pretty special. And I would say that that would have been one of the huge ingredients with the Bears, is that we were a team. There were no individuals. It was just, it was a team.
Yeah, I think that fun element can often be missed, especially in senior coaching. We think that as soon as we step out of the high school kind of development area, that it's okay, it's all business now. But I couldn't agree more. Like, the more smiles on faces you see at practice, the better the performance is going to be, without a doubt.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong either. I won't challenge a player if they're not at least putting in their 100 best effort.
For
right?
Sure.
I demand that of myself, of my kids, of, you know, everything. I think that really, if you're not trying hard to be better every day, you know, if you're not trying to be your best every day, then, you know, what are you doing? You know, especially when you're putting your hand up to say, I want to be an elite level athlete. And if somebody's putting money on the table for you, you know, there's a responsibility there. And sure. I certainly feel that responsibility as well. Yeah. However, all of that said, we are still playing a game. And they should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. You touched on it a little bit earlier, but if you had your perfect team profile, what kind of rugby would you like to see the Seattle Seawolves playing this season?
I'll be very, very clear. The most important guy on our team is going to be the tight head prop. He'll set down the big pillar, right? And then our second guy is going to be our other prop. Right. If we can have a strong front row, I know who the players are, so I'm feeling confident that we have the foundation to be able to launch from. I know what a front row can do to change a game. And then after that, we got to be able to win our ball in the forwards, get some ball going forward, and because we have an electric back line. You know, I'd be looking to, you know, use width when we need to use width and go through the middle when we need to go through the middle. You know, we're going to be able to hopefully adapt on the fly and read what's in front of us and play the opportunities we have.
Okay, cool. Often with a new season starting, you've kind of got an idea on where you're going from the previous season, but this is all new. What do you feel are some of the things you'll need to get right as a team in the early stages of the inaugural season?
I think really the biggest thing is to be able to get guys to rally around the vision of the game. You know, they have to buy into what we want to do. Otherwise, it doesn't matter who you are. If your team doesn't want to back you, then it doesn't matter what you do. But that said, I feel pretty confident that that will happen. The same thing happened with the BC Bears. It was when I was given the opportunity to coach those guys, I was told by I don't know how many people, you know, that the Bears program is, you know, it's no good anymore. You're going to have a real challenge to get guys out. Kids these days aren't like when we were younger. They don't want to play in the summer. All of those sort of things we were told.
That's crazy.
You know, yeah. And again, like I said, I went into change rooms and talked to guys, and I had an enormous amount of support from the UBC coaching staff as well as the Burnaby coaching staff and other coaching staffs. It was really great. We really, or at least Phil was a player as so I certainly made my way, or went out of my way, to make sure that I tried to include as many people in the fun as possible. So at the, you know, and I vowed to people, you know, that we were going to play a good style of game.
Yeah, without a doubt, and he definitely did. And you know, the proof's in the pudding. What about you as a coach? What's your favorite part of the game to coach, and why do you like it?
I like the whole game, to be honest with you. I do like the set piece stuff, scrummaging, lineout stuff. I find the scrum is a really interesting thing. Again, I guess I'm coming back to it a little bit, in that it has the power to totally change the shape of a game if you dominate that particular set piece. But I really like backline stuff too. I mean, I came really late to the game. I didn't really have any sort of set notions of a lot of things. So I became a student of the whole game. And this style of game that we're looking to play is 15. It's 15-man rugby. Everybody should be looking to get a chance to touch the ball more than once, twice, three times, five times. Again, it just comes back to it being more fun. It brings that passion. So I like being able to coach on a general basis there. Typically coach to principles a little bit more. I suppose the connection part of coaching, to be honest with you, getting to know guys and create relationships and, you know, work towards something together. I'd say that's probably the most fun part of coaching. From a technical standpoint, I probably spend more time looking at scrummages and scrums and lineouts and then how they break through.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I think that's another area that's overlooked, and I definitely overlooked it until I spoke with Russell Earnshaw on the show, and that's the principles of play and using that in your coaching. We kind of always talk about it, but we don't. I personally never base sessions around, okay, number one, we're going forward. Number two, we're looking for support. Then we're looking for continuity. And actually having that theme always in every session and constantly calling the players back to it. Why did we break down? What happened? What principle of play didn't we adhere to? I think that's really important.
Absolutely. I mean, there's not it's not rocket surgery what I'm doing, but it's just sort of maybe more of an accent on decision-making stuff. I believe very strongly that guys should touch the ball as much as possible in a practice. There's an enormous amount of passing that's going on. Catch pass is constantly going on. It's not a criticism by any means whatsoever. Everybody does their thing. Everybody has their own success doing their own thing. But I did notice at the CRCs that our guys would touch the ball quite a bit more through training sessions and whatnot. So we always made catch pass a real strong accent in everything we did. Because again, if we want to be able to use width in the field, we have to be able to move the ball quickly and accurately. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's a session look like that you coach? If someone was to come along, what are they going to see if they sat down for an hour and watched you go at it?
Probably a warm-up exercise of some sort that would have a principle of play work to it. And then immediately after that, a game, some sort. And then from there, probably a skill block, decision-making block, then a game, and then a split for unit skill.
Yeah, so not much kind of blocked, kind of static skill stuff. No. It's all, everything's in motion, lots of.
There is some, like when we do catch pass stuff, there'll be stuff in there. There might be some thrown into it, but there'll still be a catch pass element. And sometimes you just have to do a block, but the other stuff that I was just talking about, there's an enormous amount of catch pass happening then already. And then the density, I guess, of the catch pass work when we do a block set is pretty high too. And then again, you just gauge what was successful when you return to that first game.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Okay. We always end the show with the same final four questions. When you were a kid growing up, who was one of your favorite rugby players? You said you came late to the game, but who was one of the first players that grabbed your attention?
Okay, I was living with some guys in 91. Sorry, you're going to get long answers from me all the time.
It's so good. This is the passionate part.
Oh, are you kidding me? I absolutely love it. Right? I had really no sort of experience with rugby other than seeing it every once in a while on TV and thinking, okay, well, whatever. Can't relate. I was a very serious swimmer. And then, you know, basketball and so in the wintertime a little bit, but then I dedicated myself to swimming. Anyways, I was living with these three rugby guys. And in 91, they would wake me up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch Canada play. And
that that's great.
The year that they made it to the top eight.
Yeah.
It was pretty special. And at the same time, though, that was when Australia won the World Cup.
Yeah.
Before that, however, one of the roommates, he had, like, bags and bags of video cassettes of All Black tours and you know, Ireland versus Scotland games in the Four Nations, or the Five Nations, and that kind of stuff, right? Anyways, so I watched a lot of rugby with these guys, and then they convinced me one day to put on a pair of shoes, 92.
Yeah.
And then I came back and started playing in 93, so I was like 24 years old.
Wow.
And then three years into it, or I went immediately back to Randwick after my first season, and then came back and played. And then 3 years later, I was on the national team, and I was in Europe.
That's great. Who was the first player then that stood out?
In 91 at that World Cup, it was John Eales.
No, he's a beauty.
Well, they were telling me you would probably be a second row, so I watched how he played. He was definitely different than everybody else.
Yeah, that's great. And I think every Australian's got a real soft spot for Ealesy. I know I definitely do. And any second rower who can kick winning goals against the All Blacks is pretty good in my books, I reckon.
Oh, man, he was genuine gentleman all the way around. So. Yeah,
absolutely. Cool. And what about now? Who are some of the favourite players you like watching going around?
To be honest with you, I don't really watch players per se. I like watching the styles of games happening around them. You can pick anybody on the All Blacks, and you're arguably looking at the best player in the position in the world, but... I look at second rows quite a bit because I played predominantly second row. Really, Scott Barrett is pretty fantastic to watch from a second row standpoint. Yeah. So is even Etzebeth, Itoje, like there's so much. There's really, it's become a very athletic position. Not to say that guys like Paul Ackford and Wade Dooley and Rod McCall and those kind of guys weren't athletic guys, but there's a genuine difference in athleticism, I would say, in the position.
Okay, and you mentioned you had some favorite coaches there, Wayne Smith, Bill Perreault. They're the main guys that have influenced you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I pick up stuff from everybody. I have a massive rugby resource library that I will share with anybody who wants it.
Yeah, put me down on that list.
Absolutely. I mean, I have 140 gigs of stuff.
Yeah, great.
So I picked up stuff from all over the place. Barry Honan, Jim Greenwood, I did a lot of stuff and really try to collect a lot of resources, so certainly have it.
Okay, great. And last question there, who's someone or a group of people in the grassroots community and over in your way in BC that deserves a shout out for the work they're doing?
I would like to speak sort of more, I guess, to Vancouver Island because those are the people who know the best.
Yeah.
Who are in smaller towns like in Duncan or in Port Alberni or Nanaimo or pick any across the country, because it goes straight across the country. The kind of people who raise their hand to give people opportunities to play, and it's grassroots rugby is a pretty special experience. So it's fun, and it is really what I believe the values of rugby should be based on. Yeah. And then from there, I would say the high school coaches in BC, because I was a high school coach. And then sort of the first star would be I cannot remember his name. I'm really sorry. He was the coach of the Prairie Blizzard. You could just see how much it meant to him and how much it meant to his team and how inspiring he was, I thought. I thought it was really inspiring to see the passion that he had for, doing the best thing he could do for his girls on the team, for his team. So it was pretty special. And I would say that's, I guess, the vibe right across the country. Mm. People were like that.
All right, Tony. Well, it's been great chatting with you, and I've really enjoyed it. And I don't think I'm alone when I say I'm really excited to see the opening season for the MLR, and definitely be following the Seattle Seawolves really closely. So I want to thank you for giving up your time and coming on the show.
Oh no, thanks very much for having me. It was as you can see, I'm a bit of a chatter. So
it's all good, man. When I get going on rugby. I can go forever too. And just ask my wife.
Yeah, my wife tunes me out.
It's gotten to that too. Yeah. All right. Well, that was great. Thanks very much.
You bet. Thank you, Ed.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at RugbyCoachSCNR or via the website at therugbycoachescorner.com. Until until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.